is we have some object and maybe another object, and we attach to it a view A, and maybe to the other object another view A. And then our objects have some additional structure that we like to call hands. I mean, not, and I mean, and these hands might have some colors. So for example, this one and this one might have the same color. They might both be blue. And if they have this property, then what we might be able to do is we might be able to somehow glue these two VUAs so that these hands disappear while the other ones still survive. And I like this hand language, so Boris Fagan always talks in this language, and it's very kind of very general. But what I learned then is, so for example, the structure, if you're thinking about four manifolds, then we learned that to four manifolds, if one likes to attach a VUA and one likes to attach a category of VUA modules to its to each of its boundary, a three-dimensional boundary. So here, then the hands symbolize three manifolds, boundaries of the four manifolds, and then the this gluing of W algebra procedure corresponds to a gluing of four manifolds along boundaries. While if you asked Davide, he might say the VUA sits as at the corner, and Miroslav, of course, as well, sits at the corner where topological boundary conditions intersect. And so then this might symbolize the, this corner, and the hands might symbolize the line defects that end on the topological boundary conditions. And then again, one can, in some sense, glue these boundary conditions to get more complicated structures. And also in other problems like Langlands, this type of gluing procedure plays an important role. So, the title of my talk is Gluing W Algebras. The reason is because I know how to glue W algebras, and because all VUAs that I can identify in the story, in these stories, are W algebras. And in some sense, they might be sub-algebras of W algebras, but it seems that everything is related to W algebras. So this means I want to start my talk by losing a few words on what I mean by a W algebra. And then I will write down a gluing theorem. That's a very general theorem. And then I will give an example. This example, Boris calls it the Urod. So the Russians understand what that word means. I don't know why he called it like this. It's actually a very, very nice object. So it's kind of has the opposite meaning, to me at least.
Say this again.
So the word is Urod. And can one of you translate it, please? It's a person that is a freak? Freak.
Freak show.
Yeah. Freak, I see.
That's what it means.
But thank you. So freak.
It's no negative moral connotation.
Yeah. So. So the name is coming from because the Urod has features that you really, really don't like if you do VUAs, but it turns out it's what we need, after all.
So you will glue.
Yes, so the Urod will essentially be this gluing functor, and the Urod, for example, almost appeared in the last talk. There was this Z of Q associated to root lattice of a simply laced type, and this Z of Q is essentially up to eta the character of the Urod, well, of a Urod, because the Urod is really labeled by, as we will see, nilpotent elements of a Lie algebra. Okay, anyway, this is the outline. So remember the word. It's something very useful. And let me start by telling a few words, you have a few words about W algebras. W algebras are the type of VOAs we understand fairly well. VOAs are not so easy to construct, and there's one construction that works well, namely to each Lie algebra and to each complex number. We have a VOA associated it called the affine VOA, and then you have a procedure which is called quantum Hamiltonian reduction, and that gives you a W algebra. So let's G be a finite dimensional, and it's better to include the word super. Then we need a bilinear form on G. So usually you assume it to, I mean, it has to be invariant, supersymmetric, and usually you assume it to be non-degenerate. Not absolutely necessary here, but of course useful. And then you fix a complex number, which we call the level. And then first of all, the affine vertex algebra is based on the affinization of our Lie algebra. A K here is a central element. And then what one does is one takes the vacuum module of the affine Lie algebra at level K, which is just the induced module of the one-dimensional representation. Let me write it like this. So what you do is you take the one-dimensional representation for the non-negative part of the affine Lie algebra, where the central element acts by multiplication by K, and then you induce it. So this is called the vacuum module, and this can be given the structure of a vertex algebra. This vertex algebra is called the affine vertex operator super algebra of G at level K. And usually you say associated to the bilinear form, but we will drop this. And then more generally, you can construct modules, which we call Vk of lambda, where you just induce finite dimensional representations of the horizontal subalgebra of the grade zero piece to representations of the affine Lie algebra. And then we call the category of modules for this one of the affine vertex superalgebra whose modules are of this type, Ck of G. Generically, it turns out this if I take a generic choice of this complex number, then this vertex algebra is simple. But for non-generic choices, it's not simple. And then you take the simple quotient, and you denote it, and it's called L usually. And then the corresponding modules we call Lk lambda. So just some notation. The well-known, most well-known affine vertex algebras are the ones when this number is a positive integer. One usually calls them the Vestomino-Witten theories. In that case, it turns out that there are only finitely many modules of the affine vertex algebra. So that means not every weight and not every finite dimensional representation induces to a representation of the vertex algebra. And so here I will denote the category of modules with a lower index of G. So I'm just setting up the notation for the rest of the lecture. So affine vertex algebras kind of sit on the top, and they are very nice because we have Lie theory at the hand. We have a very good understanding kind of them. And then the nice thing is that there's a straightforward procedure of constructing new vertex algebras, and that procedure is called quantum Hamiltonian reduction. And sometimes also called a Drinfeld-Sokolov reduction. And in physics, you call it a BRST reduction. So, and what you do is you take an element F in G that is nilpotent. And then you view this nilpotent element as an element of an SL2 triple inside your Lie algebra, so that this gives rise to a decomposition of G of this Lie superalgebra into irreducible representations of SL2. And this decomposition gives you a precise procedure of adding ghost vertex algebras, certain free vertex algebras to the affine VUA, so that you can build up a differential, and then the cohomology is the double algebra. So I will not write down any details. It's just that there's a it means for every nilpotent element, I get a W algebra, which is called the, we call it HDS for Drenfeld-Sokolov, for the nilpotent element F of our affine Lie algebra. And what type of W algebra you get depends on the type of nilpotent element. So if you have two nilpotent elements that give rise to the same decomposition into SL2 representations of G, then you get the same type of W algebra. Usually one talks about this WN algebras of SLN, which correspond to the principal nilpotent element. But the point is here, there are many, many, many more. So for example, for SLN, you have as many inequivalent nilpotent elements as partitions of the integer N. So that rises quite a lot. And all of them, for example, seem to appear in the Y algebras. And seem to appear means certain subalgebras appear as Y algebras. And so it's definitely very interesting to study all of those in some way.
Sorry, Thomas. So yeah. Subalgebras of the Y algebras are these, or the other way around?
The other way around. So usually what happens is that these W algebras have a occurrence of spin 1, they have affine sub VUAs, and then the commutant of these affine sub VUA seems to be very often a Y algebra. So that's how it relates to VUAs that appeared in this week. Now, of course, that is in general, and one example one that is nice to know by heart is, of course, the easiest example. So that is G to be SL2. Then we only have one choice of non-trivial nilpotent element. And then the W algebra of SL2 is just the Virasoro algebra at central charge C, where C is related to the level here by 1 minus 6 kappa plus kappa inverse, and kappa is the critical shifted level, so level plus 2. Usually it turns out the better parametrization is to replace this level by the level plus the dual Coxeter number, because that's the true invariant appearing there. And then it turns out if I take here for generic C, representation theory is generic, but then there are certain, if the level becomes is a certain rational number, representation theory becomes kind of more interesting. And so what the physicist calls the minimal models, they appear if K is of the type minus 2, so minus the dual Coxeter number, plus U over V, where U and V are positive integers, and U actually has to be at least 2. Then this level is called admissible. And in this case, it turns out the Virasoro algebra has modules which are denoted by vir C lambda comma mu, where lambda is equal to n times the fundamental weight, mu m times the fundamental weight, and n is going from 0 up to u minus 2, and m from 0 up to v minus 2. So what I want to illustrate in this example is the following. This, so first of all, at these special levels, the Virasoro algebra has only a finite number of simple modules, of inequivalent simple modules. Moreover, what I also wanted to illustrate is that the modules of this Virasoro algebra are labeled by two weight labels. This is due to the fact that the Virasoro algebra is the quantum Hamiltonian reduction of Vk SL2 if k plus 2 is equal to u over v, but also the quantum Hamiltonian reduction of Vl SL2. Yes?
What's omega?
The fundamental weight, omega.
Of SL2.
Fundamental weight of SL2. The fundamental weight of SL2.
What do you mean? One?
Hmm?
Just one?
Just one, yeah. Just one.
Some people call it a half.
I mean, I can identify the weight letters with the integers, then I mean one, yes. But it turns out this level k is not the only one where I get this Virasoro algebra, but also if L is equal to minus 2 plus V over U, since I take the inverse of this rational number, I get the same Virasoro algebra. And so then it turns out that the modules where one weight label is 0 are the ones that I get via quantum Hamiltonian reduction from one SL2 algebra, and the other type of modules I get from the other reduction. And in this picture, one which should think about this. So here I have a W algebra, the Virasoro algebra. It is the quantum Hamiltonian reduction of two different affine VOAs, namely SL2 at two different labels, levels. And that means I get two hands, two nice representation categories, namely one from one VOA, affine VOA, and another one from the other one. So this will be become important when I come to the general story. So this isomorphism that the W algebra of SL2 at these two levels is isomorphic is usually called Fagan-Frankel duality, and it's a general feature that certain quantum Hamiltonian reductions are isomorphic. These are very well known for if one takes here the principal nilpotent element, but there are also nice dualities for non-principal nilpotent elements.
Sorry, what is it called again? Fagan-Frankel duality.
Fagan-Frankel duality. Yes. Maybe I can state that in general. This is a nice old theorem. It's called Fagan-Frankel duality, and it says, let K be generic. Then we have that the principal, so here I take the principal nilpotent element of VKG is isomorphic to the principal quantum Hamiltonian reduction of VLG dual. If k plus h check times l plus plus h check, I think again, is equal to the laicity of the Lie algebra. So it turns out for every it's a general known isomorphism between W algebras. You have a question?
Lacing number.
Yeah, this is the Lacing number. So it's one for ADE, two for BC, and F, and three for G.
And it's the same principal element, or different principal element?
The same principal reduction. And what one often says is this is the simplest instance of a quantum Langlands duality, kind of. So especially since the W algebras are isomorphic, the representation theories are, the categories are isomorphic. And that's what one is often asked after, to understand, do I have two different W algebras that have representation categories that are equivalent as braided tensor categories. Okay, so the upshot of this first third of my talk is VUAs are kind of not so easy to get, but to every Lie superalgebra and every complex number, you get a vertex algebra. And then you can do a certain VRST reduction, which you can do for every nilpotent element in G, which is then the called the W algebra. So this gives you a huge zoo of VUAs. And these type of VUAs are the ones that usually appear in the stories we have been talking about this week. I haven't seen one that, I mean, all I can identify are of this type. Okay. Now I want to ask the question. Now I want to explain this picture better. So what I want to now to do is I want to take two VUAs, and I kind of want to glue them along a common category. And let me maybe write down the concrete theorem, and then I want to say how to think about this theorem, which I don't want to give the proof, but I'll give you an idea why this is true. So this is with Shashank Kanade. So it's an E here. And Robert McRae. And it says the following. So let V and W be VUAs, and CV and CW full braided semi-simple rigid tensor categories of V, respectively, W modules, with at most countable inequivalent, with countable inequivalent simples. This is the technical assumption for the theorem.
Full subcategories.
Right? Full braided semi-simple rigid tensor subcategories. Yes. And let tau be a map from the objects of one of the VUAs to the objects of the to the simple objects of the other one, so from simples to simples, and let it be one to one. So then the following are equivalent. On simples, yeah, simples. Then the following two are equivalent. Namely, the direct sum over the simples in the first category, x times the image, and then you have to take the dual object. Can be given the structure of a simple VUA. So I'll explain the theorem in words after I've written it down. Given and the second And the equivalent one is that there is a Braid reversed equivalence. Which maps on objects mapping x to tau of x. So morally speaking, it's the saying the following.
You reverse
the braiding.
Just
so you take I'm sorry. So it means what this statement means is these categories are equivalent as braided tensor categories. Just on this one, you always have two choices of braiding, namely the braiding or the inverse braiding, and reverse means you take the inverse braiding. So I just wanted to write the theorem down in full detail, but you don't have to understand every little bit of it. What it means is, if I have two VOAs, then I can do a VOA extension to a bigger one if and only if I find two subcategories that are the same. That means that are equivalent as braided tensor categories. And so it gives me a precise procedure. When can I do such a gluing? And I will come to examples where you get many VOA extensions. So that means we also get many reverse equivalences of vertex tensor categories. Yes?
I guess I'm missing some. Are you saying that all such categories are pairwise equivalent? Are you saying that all such categories are pairwise equivalent?
Yes.
First, I don't understand. I'm asking about the second.
But these are equivalent, so if you want...
These two statements are equivalent. If I have a VOA...
I missed the sentence. Yes. That the following up to our equivalent.
Okay.
About
you. Yeah. More questions?
Do we have an understanding of how to classify all such tau that do give a gluing? Some parameterization?
Really what this theorem is saying you is proving braid equivalences of categories is not so easy, so finding VOA extensions is not so easy, especially in the answer to your question is no, I would not know how to parameterize in any way such equivalences. But what I want to say is I think this is a good way to think about these extensions. So this means take the four-manifold picture. You have one four-manifold labeled by VOA1, another four-manifold labeled by VOA2, and you have one three-dimensional boundary component for the first one, another one for the second one. They are labeled by categories of VOA modules, and now you want to glue them to get a bigger four-manifold. And the statement is saying you can glue these ones if and only if these boundary components are diffeomorphic, and which means on the level of labeling with categories, if and only if the corresponding categories are equivalent as braided tensor categories. So this is the algebraic formulation of gluing procedures.
So on the level of VAs, you mean that you can pair the operators from one theory and from the other, so that they're mutually local or something like that?
Yes, exactly. What's the difficult property of a VOA? I mean, the complicated one is that operator product algebras are local, and this Braid reverse equivalence exactly tells you that you can pair fields corresponding to x and tau of x star in such a way that the combined OPE is local. So this this uh, physics-wise, the statement is, this is precisely the condition that ensures and the possibility of locality. And so, in principle, I wanted to sketch the proof, but I think I will just explain it in words because I don't have the time. So let me maybe do that. So the dealing with VOAs is tedious and not so pleasant. And so you what you do is you try to reduce to the problem to more treatable structures. And here, more treatable structures means tensor categories. You try to reformulate the problem in terms of a purely categorical problem that then is not so difficult to prove anymore. And I wrote this theorem down in this way for convenience because both statements hold in a better way. But then it wouldn't be the statements are equivalent. So for example, I don't need a semi-simplicity, but if I have a Braid reversed equivalence, then all I need is that a certain functor is representable and I get a VOA extension. So on the other hand, having a VOA extension, I get a I forgot that I require that tau of V is equal to W.
Then it is an extension.
That is of. I totally forgot. This is of course very important. Yeah. And on the other hand, to get a Braid reversed equivalence, you only need that the dimensions of these objects don't vanish, so that they have non-zero categorical dimension. Then, but which is almost equivalent to semi-simplicity. So, right? Because if it's not semi-simple, then you usually have objects which have zero dimension. But what is important here is I allow infinite sum. So this is can be an object in a completion. That's important to note here. Right? And this is extremely useful, and that's why this theorem is by no means obvious. So the idea how to think about let me lose a few words on how to think about these things. The module categories of VOAs are, at least if the VOA is nice enough, braided tensor categories. So they are tensor categories, and the tensor product of two modules is commutative up to isomorphism. And these isomorphisms are families of natural or isomorphisms called braidings. I'm sure many of you have heard about those. And so that means one might hope to work out statements in the on the level of braided tensor categories. And here it has been understood by Yiji Huang, James Lipovsky, and Kirillov that VOA extensions are the same as certain commutative algebra objects in the representation category. And then we have upgraded this a little bit so that we can also understand how the representation categories of the of VOAs are related to a representation categories of algebra objects. And so that really such a theorem is a statement about how can I construct these commutative algebra objects. And there's a general, so maybe I write down what a commutative algebra object is. So because that's important. So let C be a braided tensor category. Then uh, in the following structure. So A is an object together with a multiplication morphism and an embedding of the tensor identity. Is an algebra object if this multiplication is associative. So this means I can first apply my associator, here multiply, and then multiply again, or so here. And this diagram commutes, and it also respects the identity, meaning if I have 1 times A, what I can do is I can embed it in A times A, multiply, and this is the same with as just the left action of my tensor identity on I, A. So it's just an object in the category that satisfies certain axioms. And it's in addition commutative if multiplication commutes with a braiding. And it's commutative if so this here is the braiding isomorphism, and this commutes. And it turns out such algebra objects are in one-to-one correspondence to VOA extensions. So this means in this, if you want to prove this theorem, you want to understand algebra objects. And it turns out whenever I have a module category for a tensor category, then I can actually do something similar as Kevin did. I can look at a certain functor from this module category to vector spaces. And it turns out this functor, as long as the category is nice enough, is always represented by an internal end, which has the structure of an algebra object. And so it turns out here, all these VOAs can be very nicely constructed in an abstract way as internal ends of certain such fiber functors. And so that means, writing down the details would take quite a while, but it's just a very general story. Maybe if anybody's interested, I'm happy to tell you more later. But I'm done with 2/3 of the talk, so I would like to come to the third part, namely the UROT. So far I have told you that interesting VOAs are associated to a complex number, a Lie superalgebra, and a nilpotent element in the Lie superalgebra. And I have given you a theorem that says that VOA extensions, that means two VOAs can hold hands if and only if there's a braid reversed equivalence between these categories. And now it's time for the examples. And
can I ask a quick question about the statement? Is it you're saying that there's like a bijection between such equivalences and, or like an equivalence of groupoids between such equivalences and such simple VOA structures?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And that's the moral of the story is the following: if the categories are nice enough, whatever that means. But for example, the assumptions there, and then VOA extensions of this type are equivalent to equivalences of subcategories. Okay, so now examples. So the main example is a physics conjecture of the 80s that we have been able to prove. So Tomoyuki Arakawa, myself and Andy Linshaw last year. And it says the following. Let G be simply laced. let k comma l satisfy an equation that I learned from Davide. So h check is the dual Coxeter number. This is an equation that tells you that you can glue. So the inverses of the shifted levels add up to a nice integer. And then the statement has two parts, which are very similar. If I take k to be a generic complex number, I have the affine VOA of G times the basic representation, which we also had on the board, or it's a character we had on the board last lecture. And by the way, this basic representation is called the OORD. So it's but it will be clear why it's called the OORD in 10 minutes. Okay. So here we have an extension of the affine vertex algebra of G at level K, its principal W algebra at level L, and the gluing is over all modules in this category CKG whose weight lies in the root lattice, over all positive integral weights that have this property. So it's an infinite sum that actually corresponds precisely to the setup here, with one drawback, which I will comment on in a minute. But it gives you a nice example. So then this theorem can be, so here we have an VOA extension of the affine VOA and its W algebra. And we have this VOA extension because the levels satisfy a nice compatibility condition. And this is
V and W.
So here, in for the theorem, V is the affine VOA, and W is so F is the principal nilpotent element of the affine VOA at level L. And so this means if the assumptions of the theorem are satisfied, then we also would have a Bright reverse equivalence. In this case, we unfortunately don't know the existence of the tensor category structure. That's a drawback of these statements. But it gives you a nice example of such an extension. And it tells you that this extension, surprisingly, is nothing but a very nice VOA times a trivial factor. Okay. And a similar statement holds.
Thomas,
yeah.
In particular, in planes that indicate modules form a category closed and a monotron and all that.
Yeah, that. Yeah, so by Kasztan-Lustig, we know that here we have a category structure. On this one, we don't know it. This is a conjecture. This is an open problem. So this means
so it's not quite an example.
It's not quite an example. This is a conjectural example. The next one is an example.
But the fact that this carries the category of this carries the vertex algebra structure, this is a theorem.
Yes, yes.
It's not obvious that this particular.
Absolutely. So existence of vertex tensor category structure is just very difficult. That's the problem to do. And so unfortunately, that's still an open problem for the category of W algebra modules appearing.
So some Trinkieselov reduction does not behave well.
Yeah, and that's of course what you want to. So what we will see in 5 minutes is that the DS functor is whenever we can check these conditions, a Braided tensor functor. So of course it should be that means that should be a very generic feature. It's a feature one would like to prove. But it's open. So let me. Now let K be admissible So then we have the same type of statement, just that I replace the V's by an L, where L means the simple quotient, and admissible means a certain set of rational values for the level. And in this case, here the sum is same type of sum. I put a subindex k, which means the sum will become a finite sum. And I didn't tell you what that set is, and I don't want to tell you. And in this case, these VOAs, Arakawa has proven that they have a tensor category structure. And Jinwei Yang, Yiji Huang, and myself have proven that these have a vertex tensor category structure. So in this case, the theorem applies.
Simple quotient for the W tool?
Hmm?
You need to put a simple quotient.
I mean here the double is simple quotient. Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant if I don't take the simple quotient, I want to put an upper index. Yes. Absolutely. So this is an example of the theorem because everything is satisfied. Okay, so now I want to upgrade this theorem, and now I want to this UROT really to come into the game, because we don't only want to talk about the affine VOA and the principal W algebras, we want to talk about all types of W algebras. And and here comes the magic property of the UROT, which is which I actually learned from our paper. We had one thing we didn't understand, and it could only be true if the following theorem is true. Theorem conjecture coming from Davide and also from Boris. So it's independently. This is with Arakawa. It will appear soon. And it's the following. Let NKG be a homomorphic image of VKG. So it could be the universal affine VOA, it's simple quotient, any other quotient, any quotient, a homomorphic image of the affine VOA. And let N be a positive integer. Then and let HDS F comma delta be the diagonal DS functor so the diagonal reduction of level k plus n. So then we have so the statement of the theorem is the quantum Hamiltonian reduction functor commutes with tensoring with integrable representation. And I'm just writing this formally down, what that means. And it means that I take now, my diagonal reduction on my affine VOA tensored with an integrable representation. So here I do the reduction with respect to the action of level k plus n diagonal in here. And the statement is, this is isomorphic. And I should write as isomorphic as vertex algebras, no O, to the quantum Hamiltonian reduction on the first factor times the integrable representation. OK? This is super bizarre because check central charges, left and right hand side have different central charges. Well, this is why I say right as a VA, the Virasoro elements are different. They are not the same. But and now look at this. Look at this statement. This is an integrable representation. I can now and I have here an affine VOA of level k minus 1, the integrable one. The diagonal one is the one at level k here. I can apply this theorem to it. And it would say the diagonal reduction just replaces my Weyl modules here by its images under quantum Hamiltonian reduction. And on the left-hand side, I get just the tensor product of the UROT with the corresponding W algebra. Okay. And so let me, so this is the corollary of the story. And where do I write it? Why do
Thomas.
Yes?
Does this have something to do with the fact that the usual reduction of LNGs?
Yes. It is, so absolutely. So the usual ES reduction on LNG is zero. And now it definitely has to do with it, because now you could also ask what happens if I take non-integer here. And then, I mean, this ensures that the spectral sequence that you need for this argument converges. So this means, but interestingly, if you put an arbitrary module here, you still have a very interesting statement, but then you seem to.
It's no longer true.
No, it's not true, but you also get something very interesting, well, at least conjecturally interesting. But the problem is that the spectral sequence you want to look at doesn't converge anymore. It's very interesting to look what happens if n is not an integer here. Let's put it this way. So the corollary is that for any f HDSF with the setup of this theorem, times L1G, and often one writes here twisted because the Virasoro element is not the same. And a similar theorem also holds for generic level. So and now you see this is kind of nice. You have here the principal W algebra, and it can hold hands with any reduction. It doesn't matter which W algebra of type G you put there. And so this means especially all these categories here should be equivalent as long as we know that we have a tensor category. So in this sense, this is a very general statement. And the object that appears constantly is this, what Boris Fagan calls the UROT. And you see, so Tomiyuki and I, we call it a W algebra translation functor, because what you mean, I mean, this is a super simple VUA. It's nothing but a lattice VUA. It's very, we call it essentially a free field algebra. And you just tensor your W algebra that you don't understand well with it, and you have a diagonal action of your W algebra with a shifted level translated by one inside there. And so it's a very powerful statement. And for example, if one is interested in basic VOA questions, like I guess we are, then very basic questions are existence of tensor category and rigidity questions. And we get actually existence for many WL, I mean, existence and rigidity and for free from this construction, but in a way that is not entirely obvious. But it's another corollary is that for every nilpotent element, at least of type A, there exists an infinite sequence of levels where one gets these existence and rigidity results, and especially then also, and especially also certain equivalence results. So that's kind of nice. Okay. Now I prepared my talk, and then I asked myself, can one do better? And there will be so many things how one can do better. So maybe I can just write down as another statement what I checked when I prepared yesterday, because it's so nice. One thing, if you don't believe this theorem, it's very easy to check it on the level of characters, of graded characters. It's basically nothing to do. And there's a similar thing that is, what we can also do is, for example, you can take SL3. SL3 has the principal embedding, but I can also embed it in the upper 2x2 block. We would call it the subregular embedding. The quantum Hamiltonian reduction of that gives you a VUA that is called the Bershadsky-Polyakov algebra. It is a VUA that has a free boson, a Heisenberg VUA, two fields of conformal weight 3/2, and a Virasoro field. And now, but now you can also do the quantum Hamiltonian reduction of this VUA with you view this affine VUA as a module for VK SL2. SL2 embedded in the diagonal upper 2x2 block. You can do the reduction with respect to the subalgebra. And if you do that, and then what you, so then my conjecture is that you get precisely this Bershadsky-Polyakov algebra up to a pair of beta gamma ghosts. And what I did yesterday, we have a kind of a spectral sequence argument, and what one has to, there's one key observation one has to show, namely that in a certain cohomology class of a screening charge is the screening charge of the Bershadsky-Polyakov algebra, and that's what I checked yesterday. So this means this observation that we have with this Urod translation functor seems to be a very general phenomenon, that what you can do is, I mean, it raises now the question is, take a big VUA, view it as a module for an affine sub-VUA, like here we viewed it as a module for the diagonal G at level K, do the reduction with respect to the sub-algebra, it seems what happens very often is that this reduction is isomorphic to a reduction of the big VUA up to free field algebras. And Miroslav has similar observations in the generalization of his corner VUAs. So that's actually, I'm mentioning it because of our discussions, and I think this will become quite important in the future. So that's maybe an additional remark. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. I think it follows into the generalization that I have in mind.
Is it possible three things in
I don't know. Maybe one thing, this Urod appeared first in a paper by Nakajima and Yoshida, where they studied a blow up of singularities, and they observed a certain relation of partition functions, and these types of statements are exactly the VUA explanations for this blow up equation on CP2, yes. So I mean, I don't understand much about that, but that might be a comment.
Other questions? Let's say